Órale, bienvenidos and welcome to the Familia FFP podcast. I'm your host, Jorge Martin, and today we're going back to Texas. We're going to Houston, visiting the Texans. Yes, we're going to Houston, and joining us today, una invitada de lujo. Just, I'm really excited about this woman. I mean, she's just someone whom I've enjoyed her work. I was introduced to her about 6 months ago, and I'm so glad that she's joining us here. Stephanie Stradley, muchas gracias for joining us. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me. I'm glad to help.
This is all, and you know what? I love it that you put that on your Twitter handle, and that's just awesome. And the fact that you're here is just, I mean, it's so real and it's so awesome. And I also love the fact that you have my all time favorite running back over your shoulder right there, standing with Willie Nelson. It's
yes,
Hook 'em Horns, 1977 Heisman Trophy winner Earl Campbell, the Tyler Rose, yeah. Just oh. Gotta love it. And I love the fact that you, as you told me off air, that he is Houston and he's Texas through and through. So, yes. I mean, yeah, he's a favorite son. So love it. And next time you see him, tell him he's got a big fan in LA. So,
okay.
I've been waiting a little bit to get a little more clarity on the whole Texans situation. Just, it's a new coaching change. There's been a lot of chatter that's off the field with the Texans themselves. You've written about this from many, many different angles. I kind of want to just give you a little bit of the floor on kind of what kind of update can we give our Familia community on what the whole Deshaun Watson situation is.
Well, I mean, clearly it's an unusual situation. There is obviously a lot of interest in him as a football player because it's undeniable that he's a good quarterback. But the off-field things have clouded things tremendously, and just how awkward and uncomfortable the transition was when they got a new GM and the unusual circumstances of 2020, which was very difficult for a lot of different people. And there was just a lot of anger and fear and distrust. And so I think right now the situation is just on its face, without speculating, very distrustful from a football perspective and distrustful for what happened off the field. Deshaun Watson has been accused of very serious allegations against him as it relates to events that were, you know, that he's been sued for civilly and is being investigated criminally. And then the NFL is investigating him, and he vehemently denies the claims. So you have a situation where there are very serious claims, but at the same time, he denies that it happened the way that it was said it happened. And we mentioned off air that, you know, I've written something that's at the top of my Twitter feed, which is listed on this, that really answers a lot of the questions, but a lot of the questions can't be answered by those of us on the outside of it. And a lot of the speculation to me seems unfair and inaccurate. I write about the Texans, I'm also a lawyer in Texas, very familiar with this area of the law. And I think some of the national speculation has been inappropriate. And a lot of just public discussion of these cases has been kind of hard because, you know, it doesn't just hurt the people when you make assumptions about it who are part of the case. It also hurts the people listening to that conversation. And so I think that people, for emotional topics like this, we have to be extra careful. And it's very difficult when there's a group of people that go, hey, we're interested in him as a football player. And, he might not play this season, but he might play next season. And that kind of speculation almost trivializes how serious this is to a lot of different people. And, you know, I know that the NFL schedule is not the same as the legal schedule, even though people want it to be that way. But we have to have patience for it, because I think it's good for society for us not to make assumptions about the cases one way or another, because of kind of the stance it is. And, you know, it's very difficult because all of us have different things that we bring to bear in our experiences as it relates to these topics. And it just, a lot of the discussion about it is just not serious when it's a serious situation. But one way or another, right now on the field, he's done a little bit of practice earlier in camp where he would work not in team situations, but just throwing the ball a little bit. This particular week, as of today, being Tuesday, August 17th, the last 2 days he hasn't been on the field at all, but they've said that he's been working, in the meeting rooms and so forth. There were some reports saying that they were trying to persuade him to play for the team because, there were implications that he did not want to play. Now, all we know for certain is he has not publicly said anything one way or another. Now, it's been made clear that he doesn't want to play, but he personally has not said that. He reported to the first time where he was required to report or else he was going to lose lots of money under the new CBA. So he showed up. And so it's been kind of indicated as this is kind of a hold in and that, there's the belief that both sides want a trade, but it's very difficult to have a trade when there's serious allegations like there are. That because of the stance of the case right now, it does not look like it's going to be settled anytime soon. There are criminal investigations that neither party can control. The investigation goes where it goes. And, once something goes to that kind of investigation, neither party can control what happens. So, I think that even the lawyers in the case don't know what the final outcome of the situation is going to be. So it makes it very hard to trade for something where you have that level of uncertainty, but you also have somebody that objectively is good at football. So I don't mean that to be trivializing it to talk about that way, but I really do think that for those of us on the outside, we shouldn't judge and then kind of fill in the facts the way we want it to turn out. We should just go where the facts go and wait for things to turn out more. And that's not a very satisfying answer because the legal process goes very slow. I know that some people think that he should go on the exempt list, but how can you do that when this case as a civil case could easily go 3 years? We don't, and there's no limitation on when a criminal investigation could be concluded. So, we're just kind of here and, that's what the status of the case is. It's going to be ugly until it's not.
You said it perfectly. People want, fans want clarity, and you just can't have clarity in this kind of situation. And I think that's, I don't even know if I could add anything more because you said it so perfectly, because there's just nothing that can be done until.
And then as that's all going on to this side, they have to play football. There's a football team. The football team is the Houston Texans. They have three quarterbacks currently doing things for the Texans. Tyrod Taylor is going to likely be their starter, at least at the beginning of the year. In practice, he looks the best out of the three options that they have. They they're going to be working through have their new rookie quarterback. But when he actually plays a big role, or if, is to be seen. He's the third round pick, so you don't necessarily have to play him. I will say that Tyrod Taylor, I don't know how they're going to play. I think that some people have just kind of written things off because it's a team that doesn't have a lot of stars now that they've kind of retooled the team and Watson doesn't want to play. A number of the players that are known players have left. But they do have a lot of talent on the team, not on the high end, but just kind of solid players from top to bottom of these would be players that you could see starting in the right situations throughout the league. So, are there different ways you can win football games? Yeah, one way you can win football games is with stars. Another way to win football games is to have good teaching, solid players, and a system where those players can succeed. And they have a lot of different options for how they could arrange this roster. So do I have really high expectations for them right now? Not really, but I don't think that they're going to be as bad as what some people say. And theoretically, I don't think it's very likely, theoretically, if you had a Deshaun Watson playing with this roster, I think that they could be actually good.
So you touched on Tyrod Taylor coming in as a starter, and we could start, from he's had some success from a fantasy football perspective.
Yes.
He's someone who runs the ball. He's accurate with the deep ball. Does it look like they're going to tailor the system to his talents in that way?
It's really hard to say. I did have the observation at camp that sometimes when they were in the red zone, I could see how, I can see why he would be better once you get to the red zone, but you have to get there first. So let's say you get to the red zone. I could see that he could be effective in the red zone. Like I could see a season where they're like trying to hold on the ball, just move the sticks, take some deep shots. Like I could see them having that kind of offense. And, I won't say every single position, but just generally speaking, I think some of the things that would be beneficial for the Texans relative to previous years is they do have, I think, on average, better position coaching. And, so you have some players that have the opportunity to perform at a higher level now that they're being coached better. It'll be interesting to see how it works on the defensive side of the ball, where, Lovie Smith is focused only on being a defensive coordinator, teaching, and installing a system that, you might not have to have, the top players in the league to make that system work. If you can teach things the right way, that they're interested in working together, you can win that way. It's very difficult to win that way. Some players are just like hitting the easy button. But if you work well together, and I don't know what the high end is for this defense, but I don't think they're going to be as, the team as a whole is going to be as bad as people suggest. But I'm not, like, there's so much uncertainty. Like here is the roster. Usually by August 17th, I have a pretty good understanding of which players are staying, which players are going. And I think that they have a lot of options on how they construct this team together. It's just what their preferences are.
Can we go to the running back room? David Johnson had the quote, "It's tough," about his situation.
Yeah.
After the last preseason game, Mark Ingram didn't play, which lends people to believe he's the starter. Philip Lindsay is there. He's been a starter. Can you kind of shed a little light on kind of what looks like a murky situation? Is it a committee, or could it be somebody takes a lead role?
I have a really hard time figuring out how that's going to be, because they were so bad at running the ball last year. Like they did it a lot. They at early especially, they weren't very efficient at it. And if you take Watson's numbers out of it, it's not good at all, right? They look better, but you can't really use last year's team as a standard of what you'd want to see in the NFL. I have to say, like Taylor, I have liked Mark Ingram in like kind of finding his way in the end zone. There's some players that when you get close to the goal line, they have a sense of timing and just vision. And, it's hard to say that in camp because you're not really hitting the same way as you do in a game. And we haven't seen him in any kind of game. But I can kind of see a little bit of that in him when he's been playing. And I think at least in terms of seniority, I think that they were going to kind of defer to him unless he can show that he can't do it. But I think he might be well suited for it. But, Any number of ways that this could turn out would not surprise me. It's a 17 game season. So it would also not surprise me if you have kind of a New England thing where they kind of do it based on matchups and they think, okay, well, this running back's better for this, or we're going to throw the ball more out of the backfield, against this matchup. That wouldn't surprise me at all if somebody has a big week 1 week and somebody else a different week, or it's just who survives camp. Like we're still have a ways to go. And, the temperatures by the end of this week are going to be close to like 100 degrees. The start of camp, like when you show up at 8:45, pretty typically is 86 degrees. Very humid, as you can tell.
I've seen, to me, Houston humidity is the worst I've ever seen. I mean, and I've been to Louisiana and Florida. It's just, and other parts of Texas. Yeah, I don't know. There was something about Houston humidity that makes it.
Oh, yeah.
You're tougher so, stock out there.
You know, it's difficult to get through camp and make sure that you don't have the kind of, you know, cramps and strains that you can get if you don't, if you're doing all that work and you're trying to stay hydrated and not breaking down. And, you know, nowadays they have one a days and not two a days like they used to. And it's first thing in the morning, but it's still, you know, pretty challenging.
Well, let's go over to the wide receivers. Brandon Cooks had a very good season, had some really good games, especially the last game of the season, finished with 1,150 yards. There are other players like Kiki Kuti, Nico Collins, the rookie, I saw him make a nice grab in the preseason game against the Packers. How do you see the targets? Could this be something where Cooks is the alpha and, you know, really the guy who gets a lot of targets and other people just kind of get the scraps left over?
You know, I find that really kind of the question. It was interesting to see the offense work this last game, and they were very much trying to kind of work on the passing game and you know, letting Davis Mills, the rookie, kind of get his game action, because, you know, for a lot of players that aren't expected to start, this is the only time that you really get to see them against true competition. I get a little concerned about the accuracy of both Taylor and Mills. You know, so Cooks isn't the biggest target. He's certainly the most experienced option, and, you know, and he's worked with a lot of different quarterbacks and has thrived in lots of different situations. So, I mean, you would think just as a percentage basis, you know, that would be a good play. I'll also say that if you look at this roster, there's a lot of pretty tall, big targets that the Texans have at wide receiver. And you know, if you don't have the most accurate arm in the world, you like a big target that has a big catch radius. So, I mean, you have a lot of different options that could be in the mix. Rookie Nico Collins, 6'4", 215. Chris Conley, 6'3", 205. Who knows who's going to be the final choices of the wide receivers, but you have some big options on there. Kiki is a smaller wide receiver, but he's still 5'11 out of the slot. You know, but it's going to be interesting to see who the final 53 is going to be.
Awesome. Well, you mentioned the tight ends. Yeah. Some of the players that have gotten some talk, I mean, from past and present, Jordan Akins and Pharaoh Brown seem to be the ones. You know, with this being a team where you can't really, at this point, with a new coaching staff, new quarterback, it's hard to decipher what kind of the run pass split is going to be. Is there going to be enough left over to, you know, have one tight end maybe kind of stand out for fantasy?
Hard to say. I would keep an eye out on Pharaoh Brown just because he can block too. Akins has had a little bit of injury issues during camp, so that's something to watch. I mean, he's been very effective in the past, you know, in spurts. I mean, they haven't really, I don't think that position traditionally was coached very well under the O'Brien era. So, I mean, there's a lot of different things that we could be seeing, even if you're running basically the same offense through Tim Kelly. I also would suggest to keep an eye out on the rookie Brevin Jordan. You know, that's a Casario pick. You know, I think pretty much all of the rookies have probably outplayed the position that they were picked in the draft. Like, I mean, for me personally, whatever round you were picked in, I don't really care. Now, can you play ball? You know, and so, but these guys, yeah, they've probably, at least in camp, looked better than where you would expect the player to be. And, you know, he's had some really good moments in camp, and he's somebody to watch. But I would think Pharaoh Brown is somebody that if they end up going the route where they really want to establish the run, which is, you know, something that Coach Cully has been talking about. So, like, they may be one of those teams that are like, we're establishing the run, even though that's not really the modern NFL as much. You know, if that's important to them because of maybe some of the limitations that they have at the quarterback position, you're going to want somebody that you trust to block in your tight end position.
Well, let's talk about the blocking. I mean, one of the things that I think kind of goes underrated on the fantasy side is those guys in the trenches, the offensive linemen. And this is a team that Pro Football Focus ranked them to number 20 going into the next season. There was some investment made into this offensive line.
Trading away 2 first round picks.
So, yes.
Yeah.
Well, what kind of unit are we looking at?
Well, you know, it's interesting because what 3 of them currently are in the reserve COVID list, and they hit the reserve COVID right before the Packer preseason game. Tunsil actually tested positive, and Titus Howard and Roderick Johnson were close contacts, right? So that is a level of uncertainty because when you have COVID, you can either have no symptoms, some symptoms, some long-lasting symptoms. So anytime that there's a player that has been listed as having COVID, you need to be watching to see if they have all their physicality back when they, you know, come off the list. But I do think that the position coaching is much better at the offensive line position. I mean, we'll have to see them play, you know, in real situations. But just from the people that I trust that look at offensive line play and just how they've been practicing, I mean, I think that they're really working to get the best 5 on the field. Even if that player might prefer to play tackle, if it would be better for them to be playing guard, that's what they'd be playing. And you know, maybe that is developmental. And so the question with the offensive line to me is, what is that best 5 going to be, you know, once we get everybody off the COVID list? And, you know, are they going to be good enough at those positions? Because, you know, the jack of all trades is the master of none. And so, like, you might be moving people around to try to make sure that you can kind of protect yourself if you have an emergency situation, because we're going to have to all be fairly flexible this season with, you know, just COVID about. But we'll see if they can kind of settle down with their 5 and perform well as a unit, because it really hasn't been that way. Like, the offensive line hasn't been just a solid group for the Texans for a long time. You probably have to look back towards the Kubiak years.
Oh, wow. That's a while.
Yes, now it has been. Yeah.
You touched on the Lovie Smith coming over as the defensive coordinator. He's been considered one of the, you know, one of the great minds of the last, you know, 15, 20 years on that side of the ball. You know, this unit lost some star power, and it was a unit that I'll tell you, from a fantasy perspective, I attacked it with, you know, whenever I had players going against the Texans, especially late in the season, it was a team that I looked at. It's like, okay, I want someone going against them.
Yeah.
Is this, you mentioned the better coaching, could there be some improvement even with the perceived loss of high end talent?
I mean, I really think that they're going to need some help. You know, I think, you know, when coaches say all 3 phases need to come together with the Texans, it really does, because can this defense help in spurts? Yeah. And they're really focusing on turnovers. And you saw a bit of that in a preseason game, that they were able to get turnovers. And that's been a big focus of Lovie throughout his career, and specifically with this Texans team. Like a lot of teams that are projected to struggle, they are focusing a lot on special teams, because you can steal some things if your special teams works together well as a unit. And so they're going to need some help with field possession. kind of time of possession on offense. Cause like, as you can learn from the early Texans, you know, we're starting over with the Texans. Those early Texans actually had some decent defenses. It was just, their offense was so terrible that the defense was on the field too long. And that had been kind of a struggle of the Texans over the last couple years at times, when the offense, you had a dynamic player, but it wasn't being very consistent. So they are going to need a little bit of help, but it is interesting to me. Like, this is an, you know, different scheme, different coach, a whole bunch of different players. It is not the J.J. Watt show anymore. It's not, you know, the Jadeveon Clowney show. It's not any of that. Like, you know, the story of the Texans over the years is they've been terrible. They draft somebody great. The great player tries to carry the team. Great player can't carry the team by themselves because there's other gaps in the team, whether it's coaching or kind of roster composition. So that's not this Texan. This Texans group is not, hey, this guy's trying to carry the team. It is, we're just going to really have to try to coach up these players. And one of the things that I think that they're trying to do this year, given the situation that the O'Brien Texans put them in, is, okay, what would you do if you're in this situation? And I think Nick Caserio's view is, hey, we're going to really focus on vets with upside. You know, maybe they kind of like that, maybe be the part of the NFL where players fall in the gaps and they're good players. They're maybe not the top players that deserve the hugest contracts, but they're decent players. And if you get enough decent players together who aren't overwhelmed by the NFL because they're just, you know, they're rookies and they don't know anything. Like they know stuff, you know, in the 3 to 7 year range. So if you get enough of those players together and they work together, you can do some things. And I think that is their defensive approach. I think that's their offensive approach. And I think that they're going to really focus on making their special teams a solid unit. And then if it all comes together and the stars align in a certain way, maybe they win games. And maybe, you know, like the reports that Deshaun Watson, they're trying to persuade Deshaun Watson to play. Do I think that is a real report? Not really. You know, that might be one of those things where they're trying to say, hey, look, this player has value and trade for him, which is kind of, but I mean, I don't want to speculate about that. I'm just saying, that theoretically would be a possibility because, I mean, as I said in my piece in March, if I was pushed to do an analysis of it, I thought that it would be very difficult to trade him while these cases are in the current status that they're in. But he's on the roster. Currently, the NFL is not choosing to do anything about him. So what do you do? And, you know, who knows? Who knows what they do or what – or what Deshaun Watson wants, because he might just go, hey, look, I don't want to play for you. I don't believe in you. I don't believe in this leadership. But he does definitely have good friends on that team. Like, he's friends with people on that team. You know, every year he has played football. Like, that's his thing that he does. You know, when he was out on the field, in moments, if you didn't know that there was anything going on, you wouldn't know that there was anything going on. It's just a strange situation.
Yeah, I mean, having been around pro sports as much as I have, yeah, there's just unique relationships that those players, that they all form amongst themselves. And it's, you know, that's the thing. We're just going to have to wait and see and, you know, and just react, which is what I always tell people in the fantasy football community. It's just like Bruce Lee said, you be water. You just kind of be ready to react whenever.
And with this team in particular, could they be a defense that's so bad that you can pick on them every week with like waiver wire guys? Maybe. Or they might be middle of the road. They might actually be good. Like that whole range of stuff, who knows? Because there have been things that have dragged the Texans down in recent years. And Nick Caserio's tried to fix some of those things. How many of those things that you can fix in short order, and how can you, like, I was just listening to a conversation with a player today about what is it like when all of these people are trying to learn each other's names and know about each other and try to come together that quickly to play a 17 game season. Like it's, I can't think of a situation like it. And, you know, if you were treating, you know, the Texans as a Netflix show, it's a very strange show. You know, sometimes I'm like, you know, if this was Ted Lasso, what would my role in this be? Because, you know, they're really trying to create a positive future culture, but it's hard to do that with such hurt from 2020 and the things that are happening with Watson and just some just really ugly, distressful feelings and anger and fear of things that I'm not sure have been fully communicated well over time. And hopefully it gets less weird here because, you know, football is supposed to be fun. It's supposed to be an escape and it doesn't fully feel like that yet, but hopefully for the people in Houston, Texas, it gets that way.
Yeah, we need those escapes. Well, let's close out with an escape ourselves.
Okay.
Mexican food.
Yes.
We talked about that. You're in Houston. You know, yes. I've been to Texas enough times to know I can get great Mexican food. What are your favorite types of tacos and other kind of Mexican food?
Yeah, it's not just tacos. I mean, within 5 miles of my house, I can find just about every kind of Mexican food that I can want, you know, old school Tex-Mex, Mexico City kind of Mexican, just everything. My favorite probably is any place that has all day breakfast. You know, cause like, you know, I like a lot of the dinner foods and I'll definitely eat the dinner foods, but I just love breakfast tacos. I love chilaquiles. I had huevos rancheros yesterday that were just perfectly spicy. Like just where you could taste the food, but you just got a little bit of tears coming out with the big old.
That's when it's perfect.
Had like a big old jalapeno right in the middle with like the white cheese on top. It was, and I was just, it was spiritual. Like it. I really, it was great. I had to go to practice later. I'm like, I need something good in my stomach right now. So that's, but like, my first professional resume, you're supposed to list your interests, and I was so busy, I didn't like, I like to watch sports, like whoop-de-doo, you know. So I put Tex-Mex on there because I'm like, well, if I really am thinking about the things I do eat a lot of Tex-Mex. I put that on there. And I got to say, out of everything on my resume, the only thing that people want to talk about is the Tex-Mex. Like, where's your favorite enchiladas? It's like, oh, I like this place. You know?
Oh, I love it.
You know, I mean, I have to say the best part, not the best part, but so much of what makes Houston rich is there are so many people that bring so many great things together, like the food and the culture. And no matter what you're interested in, you're going to find people that love that stuff too. And, you know, even though it's a really big town, I always think of it as the friendliest big city in America. I mean, like that picture I have behind me, I mean, it's just, that's a very Houston picture.
I love it. I love it. Oh, Steph, I mean, I un millón de gracias. I can't thank you enough for joining us for this talk. And I always love closing these out with food talk because yeah. It's always, no matter how hard it was before we talk, we always end up with a smile on our faces.
Well, I hope your fantasy football teams eat.
Yes, definitely do. Definitely do. Before we close out, let us know where everybody can find your great work.
I have a link to all the things I write in my Twitter bio. So if you go to @StephStradley in my Twitter bio, I have all my Chronicle stuff with a link. Those are very Texan specific. And then I have other things that don't quite fit there on my personal blog. And you can find that any version of my name or StephanieStradley.com or StephStradley.com. It all goes to the same place.
Awesome. And definitely give her a follow on Twitter right there, that at Steph Stradley. And Familia, eso es todo for our show. Thanks again to Anchor for being our hosting network and making sure Independent Podcast gets out to the Familia community. Also, thanks to YouTube for putting our faces out there and making sure we get the video element out there. Please make sure to subscribe at YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts. You can find original content at familiaffb.com. You can find me at JorgeMartin17 right here, where you can see right there. Also, you make sure to go. Yeah, the pointing is fun sometimes. And also make sure to follow our Twitter and Instagram at FamiliaFFB. Otra vez, Stephanie, thank you so much. Muchas gracias. And everybody, todos somos familia. Salud.